Hey folks, welcome back to School Spirit. This is Tom McNew again here on the Armor of God Catholic Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you carving out some time and joining us here. Miss Robin, happy Friday.
Yep, happy Friday. Here we are.
Thought maybe you lost
together again.
And folks, if you missed last week's episode, we had a chance to talk to Miss Misty Poe and Mrs. Kelly Laster, superintendent and assistant superintendent of Catholic schools here in the Austin Diocese, respectfully. We carved out some more time in their calendar, and we appreciate it. Ladies, thanks for coming back and joining us here.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
So, folks, again, if you missed last week, we were talking a little bit about what makes our Catholic schools different. And one of them is this unique aspect of the curriculum. And we talked a little bit about the fact that, and Kelly, you correct me here now, that we talked a little bit about the fact that that really at the heart of the matter is our Catholic identity, but the model is just something that we start with. Is that kind of a fair statement?
I think so. So the classical is a very general term. And so there are classical elements in all of our Catholic schools, but for what's important for us is that there is a Catholic school model. Yeah. The classical model can be in the public school, the charter school, the Catholic school, but a Catholic school model can only be in a Catholic school. And so we take those classic elements and make sure that we infuse them with our faith.
And we talked a little bit about how, I think Misty, you said last week, you talked about that there's these different stages within this model, grammar, dialectic, and rhetoric. And really all that is, as I understand it, is a way for the instructors, the educators to pull the knowledge from between the ears of our students.
Yes. So it is a way of teaching those particular grade levels, because the grammar is focused on K-5, the logic is 6 through 8, and the rhetoric is 9 through 12. Mm-hmm. But it's really taking them to that next step, like in the logic, the critical thinking, analyzing information, and being able to not only just do that, because our public schools are also doing that in forms, but doing it through the lens of our faith and seeing how their life now related to everything that's come before and after them. So I have to say, in visiting one of our schools, as I was learning about the classical model, it was fascinating where their scope and sequence is based on history, a historical timeline, which is one unique difference when it comes to the element of it. And so they're reading a book based on a timeline. So you have your history, you have your literature, and then they're analyzing it. So it's this cross-curriculum piece, and then the religion component of how did their faith or our Catholic faith impact this part of history in this novel. And it is just seeing these fourth and fifth graders make these connections is unbelievable. If you ever get an opportunity, you have to go visit one of our schools to see that in action.
Yeah, we've been very blessed here with the network to have a great relationship with the schools that we have up in here in the what we fondly referred to as the I-14 corridor. And it is always fun to go and because I'm always amazed at the kids. In fact, I was at St. Mary's and Temple several months ago, and just remember the joy that was coming out of a classroom as the kids were moving from one section. I don't remember exactly what they were doing, one subject to the next, but they started with a prayer. They started with the Hail Mary, you know, and I just thought, man, if that's not the difference right there, then what else is there? So, I would encourage everybody who's listening to go take some time to walk through the Catholic school that's in your neighborhood, in your parish circle, or in the next town over, as the case may be. So, we talked a little bit about last week, about this and I'm going to kind of circle back to the Socratic circle and how that's used as an example. And I want to really hone in on kind of the evaluation piece, because, you know, our kids are still going to have to, most of them, well, maybe not. There's going to be some number of our high school kids that are going to graduate, and they're going to choose to go to a public college, trade school, university, wherever, whatever the case may be. And so there's still going to be this requirement for them to show a transcript that's got X number of points and credits and whatever the standard is nowadays. So how are we capturing, and maybe you can speak across, you know, an umbrella across the diocese and not necessarily in a particular school. So how are we capturing this evaluation method?
Well, curriculum, instruction, and assessment should all be aligned. Okay. And so when a teacher, I used to tell my teachers when I was a principal, you need to decide what you're going to teach, and you need to teach what you said you were going to teach, and then you need to test what you taught, which is what you said you were going to teach. So mm-hmm. you need to, from the front end, make sure that the experiences that the kids have, that you're really starting with the assessment, how is it that we want these kids to show that we, that they understand what we've just done. Uh-huh. And so for instance, a Socratic circle, there's a lot of practice that has to happen with that. You know, you have to teach kids that. But at the same time, as you're teaching them and as they're practicing, you're helping them understand what it is you want them to get to. What is the assessment piece to that? How are you going to know as a teacher that they've understood how to have these conversations? And so that could look different mm-hmm. In any classroom, and certainly within the grade levels. A lot of that is writing. You know, writing comes in naturally with speaking and debating. And so helping the kids translate that conversation into writing, you know, can you defend what you said, and can you research it, and then can you write it? And so rubrics are very important in assessment in this piece, but the most important piece is helping the kids know ahead of time, this is how you're going to be able to show me that you know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. So they're told up front, you know, hey, this is the standard, and this is what you're going to be expected to recall, for a particular, any particular subject.
Or,
any particular
or explain or describe yeah. or yeah.
Analyze.
Mm-hmm. 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 I have always said that as long as there are tests in school, there will always be prayer in school.
Yes. Well, and that's what I was going to say before Kelly responded to that answer. Our goal is first to get them to heaven, and then we'll get them to Harvard.
I love that. I love that. That's awesome.
Hallelujah. So that's the Catholic school there. So once we prepare them for heaven, then the Harvard, the assessments are coming in, and the students are actually doing really well. Kindergarten through eighth grade take a national standardized test. And so across the diocese nationwide, they're scoring above the national average. Wow. And then our high schools, they still take the ACT, SAT, pre-SAT, as they're ready for college. And we just got through recognizing a couple of weeks ago, 40 of our high school students who were recognized as National Merit Scholars coming from 5 of our high schools.
Wow.
So what is that? What's the criteria for a National Merit Scholar?
So there's several different distinctions. So, and they're based on test scores of the SAT, which and ACT, which is done through College Board. But College Board makes several different distinctions: semifinalists, finalists, commended scholars. And so all of those categories are in the top 1% in the nation on SAT scores. So those kids are scoring in the top 1%.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we had 40 kids across our high schools here just in the diocese that made National Merit.
Correct.
Say it again.
It's the National Merit Scholar Program. So there's several different levels within that.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's a, that right there is a testament to, I think, the methodology of itself. And really kind of what I'm hearing is that maybe we should coin a new term. And instead of just using air quotes again, using the classical educational, really what we should be talking about is a Catholic classical education model.
Absolutely.
That's it. Yes.
Yeah. 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 So we still have this requirement, though, and we kind of started talking about it a little bit last week about training and implementation. And Kelly, you mentioned the standards or the additional training that all the teachers have to go through. How do they meet that requirement?
Specifically for the religion piece?
Any of them.
So there's actually kind of two tracks that teachers have to take. So there's more of the instructional track, and then there's the religion track. So we talked about the religion track a little bit last time.
Mm-hmm.
All of our teachers, whether they teach religion or are Catholic or not, have to have 50 hours of Catholic school training, and that's done through the Franciscan at Home modules. They're mm-hmm. asynchronous, although a lot of our teachers choose to do it together and talk about it as they're doing it. And then our teachers who teach religion are required to have 150 hours of Catholic school training. So that's just to make sure that there is a foundation and that we understand the Catholic faith enough to share that with our students, no matter where we are as adults in that path. Then there's the more professional instructional piece that is in addition to that. And so the Texas Conference of Catholic Bishops Education Department requires that teachers have at least 8 professional hours, clock hours every year in instructional practices. Many of our teachers have many more hours than that.
Yeah.
But and they can choose. And a lot of times the principals will work with the teachers to set goals. You know, what area do we need to make sure that we look at next when it comes to professional development? And our office helps with professional development training as well.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to ask. So how much do the individual principals and teachers rely on you, Misty, and your staff up there to point them in the direction that they need to go?
Yeah, they we provide them a lot of guidance. Our mighty team of four has so much capacity. So, but they do, we have each school analyze their own areas of strength and areas of growth. Okay. So we are blessed to have 19 unique schools that offer fabulous programming that all contain some type of classical component. But they also are special in other areas that they specialize in. So based on their needs and the needs of their community, which are really important in serving, they will do a needs assessment, and either our office might be able to provide PD, or we give them other resources. Either the National Catholic Education Association offers some great professional development opportunities. Those that are looking for those classical components will use the Institute of Catholic Liberal Arts for some support. So, and we have some amazing and gifted parents with a background in some of these areas that have also provided support for our schools throughout the diocese.
That's wonderful. Folks, if you're just now tuning in to join us, thanks. This is Tom McNew again with Robin Spencer, and this is School Spirit on the Armor of God Catholic Radio Network. And this is kind of our second week with Ms. Misty Poe and Kelly Laster, the superintendent and assistant superintendent here in the Diocese of Austin. And we're diving into some of the aspects of the curriculum and our Catholic classical educational model. I'm gonna take ownership of that phrase. So no, not really. Thanks for tuning in, folks, and we appreciate it. And if you missed the first part of the show or you missed last week's show, we rebroadcast every Sunday afternoon, also at noon. So you can set your alarm now and tune back in on Sunday. And So we're talking about this training aspect here, just to break the myth, my parents and younger sister are retired public educators, and the idea that the parent or the teachers are off all summer, that they get a 3-month break during the summer. I'm here to tell you that that is a myth, that is a gross falsehood. But I would imagine that that's, and just like our public school educators, that that summertime is when they're going through these professional development modules and courses. Is that a true statement?
That is true. Yes. Summertime is when they spend enhancing their own learning. So all great teachers are lifelong learners. Yeah. So during that summer, they are expanding their own growth. They're assessing their students' needs and finding out how can I better meet those needs by either joining book studies, attending webinars, attending conferences, and other support systems that the school provides.
So if I'm a teacher at school X and I want to go to spend, a couple weeks in Dallas at the University of Dallas, diving into some particular professional development, how much of that am I paying for? How much is the diocese paying for? Or does it depend?
I think it depends. So okay. We have any donors.
And I'm not trying to hem you in here on anything.
No. If we have any donors who would like to contribute to the professional growth of our teachers, please give me a call. University of Dallas actually has an amazing summer program they just launched for educators, and I would love to send teachers there. But so the schools do have some PDs set aside for them, just depending on the expense of it sure. that they can provide. So it just depends on the expense and what time of the year that they're heading out.
Yeah. A lot of grant writing. There's a lot of grant writing attached.
I'm sorry, there's a lot of what, Kelly?
Grant writing.
Oh, yeah. But a lot of this is stuff that they can do, again, using air quotes, remotely, right?
Right.
They don't necessarily need to be on location at some other organization.
No, NCEA, which is the National Catholic Educational Association, mm-hmm. has all of our schools are members. And so they're able to use that membership to go to any webinar, and they keep a running list of webinars on their website, and they're asynchronous. Well, they're both. So you can attend it live, and if you're not able to make it, then you can watch it asynchronously. Actually, I presented at one of those webinars, and they're wonderful because you can speak to that area that is your expertise, and then they'll place it on their website, and it'll be up for a year. And Ooh. So, for instance, what I did was I presented on Catholic social teaching. And so throughout the year, as teachers are, that's maybe hitting their radar, they can go back and they can attend that webinar. And they're usually about an hour, hour and a half.
That's awesome.
So a couple things quick, if I can interject.
Yeah.
To go back to Kelly, to a reference you made in regards to the hours that a specific religion teacher would receive in training, when is religion, what grade level is religion taught as a separate course? When does that begin?
Pre-K.
Okay.
Pre-K. I love it.
So you have a segment that's just religion versus the integration that we talked about. Because we talked last week about that integration of religion and our faith into all of the areas of the curriculum. But there's also a specific some specific things that you want to get across that are just part of the religion component of the day.
Right. So there's our accreditation is through TCCB, and there's a requirement starting at pre-K for at least 30 minutes of religion a day. And that's pre-K, the amount of time increases as the grade level increases, but that's pre-K through 12.
Okay.
And so all of our students each day have religion or theology class. And then the infusion of our faith is throughout all of the subjects, but religion is treated separately as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. And so I think I'm hearing this as well, that because the curriculum isn't necessarily, exactly the same at every school. And if I heard that wrong, correct me, please. But that there's the components of the classical, there's the components of making sure that you get all the standards met in all of the schools. But there's some freedom for the educators as to how they bring that into the classroom. Is that accurate to say?
That's very accurate. So the standards are the same among all of the schools. The way they, the perspectives they use and the instructional strategies that they use, they do have a lot of freedom there, yes. Now, in religion, not as much because they are still aligned to the church, but
sure.
But in the other ones, absolutely.
Fascinating.
That's so great to hear from an educator's point of view because some of that is lost. Tom, when you were talking last week about the differences in public versus our Catholic schools. And that is something that is very difficult now for an educator to be able to bring into that. Everything is so scripted now in the public education that it's very difficult to bring your sense of that naturalness of being an educator. You know, many of us, we go to school to become an educator and we bring our own self into that. It's a blessing in the Catholic schools to be able to bring our own religion into our day fully and completely, not just while we're at home or anywhere else in our environment, but at work too. So that's such a blessing. But there's not much freedom in the public schools to bring your own personality or your own self into how you approach the learning because there's so much to fit in the day and it's so scripted. And it sounds like, as from an educator's point of view, that this would be kind of an ideal setting to be able to teach. So thank you for that opportunity within our diocese.
Yeah, Robin, to clarify, like, as Kelly said, the standards, there's religion standards that are consistent from pre-K through 12th grade for all of our schools.
Great.
So doing the standards, but how they meet those standards can vary based on the teacher's choice and the methodology they're using and the resources and the needs of those students. So it is a beauty to truly be able to teach those standards and not be prescribed what you need to say and how to teach it.
Yes. And not only just, I wasn't even just speaking just from the religion point of view, I was speaking all of your content.
Correct.
But let me ask that, and perhaps it was answered, and I apologize if I missed it. Who sets the standards for the religion? We know that the state sets the standards for other content, but who sets the standards for the religion piece at all grade levels?
We do here at the diocese, and with our bishop. So at the high school, those standards are set by the USCCB, so the United States Conference of Bishops. The high school standards are set.
Thank you.
And
that's
then
great
at K through pre-K through 8th, we set those at the diocesan level, according to Bishop in our office.
Great.
And I know that Bishop Joe has a very special place at his heart for all of our Catholic schools and all of our Catholic school students. I know. And he will be missed when he leaves later this month. We know that.
Yeah, he will be dearly missed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Galveston's getting a good one.
Yes, they are. They are.
Well, we've got just a couple minutes here left in this week's episode. So, Misty, I'll give you and Kelly an opportunity to kind of closing thoughts. Any last comments or anything that we missed that you really just want to kind of hit back on?
No, I would say Robin's point just earlier regarding the curriculum and being a teacher. It's a true gift to be able to teach in our Catholic schools. So if there's anyone out there discerning what your next call is, please check out our website for any open positions. And being able to truly share your faith and forming our students in holiness and wisdom. It's the door's ready for you. Come on in. We have a desk for you.
Kelly, any closing thoughts?
You know, actually, I started my education in public education, in my professional career. And so it was a beautiful switch. And I switched because even though I was a public school teacher, my husband and I decided that we wanted our children to learn with their faith surrounded all day long. And so
they actually went to Catholic school before I did. And we have never regretted that decision.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you both ladies for carving out some time here for a couple weeks and peeling this onion back for us. Folks, again, we will rebroadcast this episode on School Spirit on Sunday afternoon at 12 o'clock. And I invite you all to go look at the Catholic school that's in your area, in the next town over, wherever. We are blessed that there's enough of them that no one in the diocese really has to drive too far to get close to a Catholic school. And if there's not one in your area, maybe it's time for you to build one.
You're being called. Listen to the calling.
Yes, that's listen right. to the call.
Well, God bless you all very much. And thank y'all very much for joining us here on School Spirit. And folks, next week, we're going to get a chance to finally nail down Father Tim Nolte and the folks over there at St. Joseph's in Killeen. We're going to take a deep dive into the academy there, and we hope that you'll join us next week on School Spirit. And remember to put on the armor of God.